and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. And today we're asking, why would you launch a music magazine in 2016? It's a fair enough question. The music press, like the music industry, was eaten alive by online, where sites like Pitchfork did what those august print publications did before them, reviewed things. But do those sites help to make a culture like Rolling Stone, The Enemy and Smash Hits did before them? Does paper mean permanence and power in the mind of the reader? To answer that question, we have Liv Siddle, editor of the brand spanking new Rough Trade magazine, and Mark Ellens, storied hero and normally the editor of pretty much every single great UK music title. Smash Hits, Q, The Enemy, The Word. It should be a good one. That's all coming up on today's episode of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned. So here we are in the studio with me, as advertised, are Mark Ellen and Liv Siddle. And we're answering the question, who on earth would launch a music magazine in 2016? Liv, I'll come to you first, because the answer actually is Liv Siddle and Rough Trade. So you were approached by Rough Trade, not the record label, but the record shops.
Yes, the shops.
To edit their first foray into print. Tell us how that conversation started and whether how confident they were that something like this would be a hit, would be a going concern in 2016, as we said, against the backdrop of that great falling off, I guess, of the music press.
Well, I think for Rough Trade, they brought me in because for the last few years they had been discussing how a lot of things happen in Rough Trade that don't get recorded or archived. So people come in, bands play there, you know, just great things happen, and they don't actually get documented further than some Polaroids being taken in store or people on their phones or whatever.
Right.
So it's kind of in time for the 40th anniversary of Rough Trade, which is this year. We are launching this magazine alongside hopefully a new podcast and also a YouTube channel as well. So we're going to be filming bands and doing interviews just to try and, I guess, lasso all this great stuff that happens in store and show people about it, because it's great and it's worth talking about and it's super exciting, and Rough Trade customers, I think, will like that, hopefully.
So you're the cowgirl lassoing this kind of, what is essentially kind of Rough Trade's atmosphere and vibe, I suppose. Its shops are kind of famously welcome, even if you know what kind of records you like, I suppose. But it's about, as we said, it's about capturing an atmosphere, is it?
Yeah, it's the atmosphere of Rough Trade. I think when you go to Rough Trade, there isn't that terror that you experience maybe in Honest John's when you pick the wrong record and go to the counter. Everyone's very friendly, even though they know so much about music and they're so happy to help. And it's just this, everyone describes Rough Trade as being a family. And I think this magazine and what we do with the content going forward is just going to be celebrating that and talking to as many people as possible, which isn't difficult when so many great bands and artists come into the store anyway. It's kind of not difficult for me to have a
Got
chat
a spare
with them.
5 minutes. Exactly.
Yeah, because like the Zombies came in the day, I had a chat with them, and then John Malkovich came in the day, I had a chat with him. It's just everyone's just coming in, and we're not going to, if they're shopping for records, we're not going to stop them in their tracks and ask them. But if we just email them and say, would you fancy coming in for a chat, they're often more than pleased to. And then that's just, I mean, it seems like a kind of bit of a crime not to make a magazine out of that, really.
What great pioneering spirit, Mark.
Absolutely.
It seems like a crime not to make a magazine out of it. Thank God these days perhaps are back with us. 2016, who thought? You know?
Who thought? I know, that's wonderful. I loved your point about going up with the wrong record, actually. There's a brilliant bit in High Fidelity, isn't there, where somebody comes in and asks for a Lionel Richie record. It says, are you in a coma? But no, absolutely. I mean,
You've been cooing over that first issue.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm just looking at it now, and I heartily recommend it. I love this cover. The cover is of a parrot, which belongs to your cover star, Charles Bradley, and it's his parrot. And I think that's rather a clever idea, because the big issue with magazines, of many big issues, is who do you put on the cover? And if you put anybody on the cover at all, clearly it's divisive. There's going to be a load of people who think it's going to be just Charles Bradley Monthly, and I don't know him or I don't like him, and therefore I'm not going to buy it. But to put his parrot on the cover is just a brilliant idea.
It's actually his parrot. Yeah, his parrot called Nicky. But actually Bruce, the designer, he was saying that it's really important to have eye contact in the front cover and how we should have someone eye contact. But we've actually got this really terrifying parrot's eyes.
Yeah, really,
out, so
kind of
quite nice.
A real gimlet eye kind of
yes, he is,
catches your attention. You can't possibly escape.
Yeah. And we were talking before we switched on the microphones, Mark, that this reminded you of one of the best features from Smash It, Stars and Their Pets.
Stars and Their Pets.
You need
alongside Stars and Their Cars.
Absolutely.
Oh, they were brilliant.
The quirky features.
They were fantastic. Oh, Smash It was wonderful. I, worked on that in the 80s, and just after I left NME, which I didn't edit, actually, although you mentioned I did, but I was fairly senior.
Well, I said you were normally the editor.
Normally the editor. But Smash Hits, that's the one thing I didn't edit, but Smash Hits was brilliant. And in a way, it was mostly bought by people who just wanted song lyrics and posters and gossip and news. I mean, the features were a kind of icing on the cake, you know. And that was the thing, you know, that mostly people bought magazines back then or newspapers just for sheer information.
Yeah.
Yeah, the NME, I can remember working in the NME news desk in about 1978, when it was my first job. And your idea of a news story in those days, because there was so little information, was that someone would ring you up from, say, Stiff Records and say, Ian Dury and the Blockheads have a new record out, and it's called, you know, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick or whatever it is, and, you know, or New Boots and Panties. And
yeah.
You'd write down the title of the album, you'd write down the track list, and that would be a page three splash on the cover.
Yeah.
New Dury album, track list revealed, seat page three.
You'd have to write, you'd have to sort of try to sort of imagine some truth revealed from song titles. And
I know, so, yeah. And I love that. I love the idea that actually at that particular time, it was only be Ian Dury, two or three members of his band, and you know, a few people at the record company who actually knew that information. So it was amazing. And the problem for us over the years, obviously, was that all the basic engines of the music papers started to be, as you mentioned earlier, started to be appropriated by the internet, the news, the reviews, and it's just, you know, and information and interviews and getting to the point where it can actually be sent to you for free, directly to your phone, cutting out all the problems of going out and buying it. But, you know, there's so many wonderful things about magazines, actually having magazines. You know, they're physical. You know, there's a wonderful tactile thing about them. The pictures feel wonderful.
Smells nice as well. That's a
good smell.
They smell
gorgeous.
You
can smell the printers in.
I always hate the smell of magazines. I don't know why everyone smells it. They're horrible.
Liv Siddle.
It's lovely. I absolutely love it.
Liv Siddle, maybe we'll see fit to cut that bit out of the final show. I don't know. I mean, no one can dislike the smell of their magazine.
No.
I don't know.
It's
maybe
all about
spray it with something.
It's all about the print, I think.
You could have a scratch and sniff magazine.
I was thinking about
that. It smells of vinyl.
I think definitely having some kind of free gift would be quite nice, like a magnet or a keyring or something, or lip balm. But I think what you said earlier about Smash Hits and even the kind of stars and their pets thing, I think that is, at the moment, one of the most important things about making a magazine is to make it fun and inclusive, because no one wants to read anything that's too serious and boring. And I think a lot of online music journalism can often stray into kind of that kind of holier-than-thou rating of music. But actually, with magazines, what you can do is have fun with it and be like, here's so-and-so talking about their dog, or here's some really great lyrics, here's the guy who works in the pub next door, and here's him talking about his favourite records. You can do anything. And I think magazines need to start bringing fun into it, because that's when you get a really great audience who wants to be part of it. And many actually don't do that. It's a very serious magazine culture where it's very kind of, oh, yes, we're going to
talk
about this.
And it feels much more like a club if it's between two covers like this, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the internet, I think, very rarely feels like a club.
No.
Whereas this, you know, with its agony uncle or agony aunt, Jonathan Richman, you've got in there. You ask any question to Jonathan Richman and he answers it.
But that's a good signing, isn't it?
It's a simply brilliant idea. I think Andrew Weatherall, isn't he?
He did the horoscope,
He does your horoscope.
He's our Mystic Meg, yeah.
And it's a brilliant idea.
I think, it's just nice to ask. I've kind of made a point of not trying to ask artists all the time about their new album. There's so many things you can talk to them other than that. Like, maybe they're really into art or photography or animals, or, you know, the Charles Bradley interview in there is a big old interview, but mainly we're talking about his love for dolphins and swans and how he goes and feeds.
And he's quite a good painter as well, right? He's a good artist.
Crucial questions that everyone should be asked, really.
But I don't know, there's more to people than just their new album. And I think that's already been done by Loud and Quiet and Clash and NME. There doesn't need to be another magazine talking about all the kind of ins and outs of the latest blah. I mean, and we have that in the top 10 albums of the month and stories around it, but as well as that, you can have some fun by talking to people who are great characters about other stuff they're into, and that's the most exciting
thing.
Well,
that's just a way in for everybody, isn't it? Because if you're talking about the album, then if you haven't heard it, you're probably not going to be terribly interested in it.
Is that what people misunderstand?
The swans and the dolphins.
Exactly, they're the thing. any water-based animal, any Charles Bradley's into it, you know, apart from his parents. Probably doesn't like a wash.
I know.
You know. Is that what people misunderstand, do you think, then? The fact that people feel that has to be this great weight of importance. There was that great kind of lot of serious-minded rock journalism, I guess, in the late 1970s and the rest of it. Some of it was fantastic, but some of it was the real, you know, gazing at navels kind of period of writing about music. Is that people misunderstand the fact that it should, as you said, Mark, be like a club, that something that you're addicted to, you have to buy every week, that you really want to, you want it to be quite exclusive, but for it to include you. Is that the success of a magazine?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way of looking at it, actually. I mean, the one I love, worked on last was The Word. And The Word,
fantastic,
I think...
Fantastic magazine,
thank
yeah.
you very much. And did that for 10 years, actually. And the way that seemed to work, I think, is it had a particular aesthetic viewpoint. You know, it seemed to like a certain type of music. It seemed to... It didn't really like bands as much. It kind of grown out of bands. It didn't like yeah. the Strokes, but it loved Tom Waits or Joni Mitchell or Nick Cave or yeah. individuals, you know. And I think that's a changing point. When you're really interested in the individual, like Jonathan Richman used to love, actually, anyone who's the actual creative agent of the music themselves rather than any other member of the band. And I think people just liked our way of looking at the world, and they thought that if we felt that way about music, they were interested in our viewpoint about other things, about films, about books.
I had great book review, really great book reviews, really great film reviews, quite left field choices. And this is the kind of thing where you are, presumably, if you're a reader of a magazine like that, you're taking a plunge into somebody else's world or a team of people that have created this magazine.
Yeah.
Like anything else, like if you're buying an album, you're kind of plunging yeah. yourself into somebody else's world. And I guess what you created with the Word and with other ones is quite a sort of slightly selfish universe for other people to
yes.
enjoy in a way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think, I don't know if I'd do it differently if I did it again. I don't know if I'd do it again, actually. I don't know. But the problem for us was that we launched a magazine that cost £4.80, and then we were under pressure from the news trade, the retail trade, to put a free CD on the front. Then we put a free CD. Then we had the internet. We had a huge, very, very wonderful creative site. And then we had a video cast and a podcast, and we had concerts and a newsletter and all these things that were free. And in the end, what happened is that people got all the free things, the video cast, the newscast, the letters that went to the concert, but they didn't buy the magazine, which yeah. was the tent pole holding up the entire sagging canvas of the whole operation. So in a way, I think what the trick we should have pulled off, which I think you're sort of slightly pulling off with this, actually, because you've got a head start by calling it Rough Trade and by it being about Rough Trade, is that you are a club. And in a sense, you know, this is the magazine that you get with it. I mean, in the best way possible, we would have got people to subscribe to all those things and give them a free magazine, because people are a bit against the idea of buying magazines.
Yes, it's a funny thing.
And because they now think that, you know, they shouldn't pay for print media, because most print media is free.
Yeah, that is true.
And the other problem is it's distribution. It's really hard to find it. You know, you've actually got to get the trick of getting the magazine in the shop on yeah. the day it's meant to be there, in the right section, facing the right way around, so they find it. But you've got a brilliant advantage that it's for sale in Rough Trade shops.
I know.
And people are already there. Yeah. And already feeling warm about the whole concept of Rough Trade and buying albums and stuff, so they're very likely to go and
bring
invest
it on.
In one.
Yeah, the nice thing is, we're actually, if you spend over £15 in Rough Trade, which is very easy, you actually get a magazine for free, so we're kind of making it really easy for everyone to kind of feel like they're getting a really good gift.
What about the development of it, Liv? We were asking this question, why would you set up a music magazine in 2016 with all the attendant pressures that Mark was talking about, and as you obviously know yourself, but what was the development? Why? Have you been able to be quite selfish with it, or did they want certain things? Did Rough Trade want it to go in a certain direction? I mean, was there a bit of a clash, or was it a very harmonious marriage so far?
Well, it's fine, but it is just, it's pretty much just me deciding what goes in that magazine.
Dream job. Yeah.
But then again, we have stores in Nottingham and New York and two in London, so that's four stores. What I need to do in the magazine going forward is to really try and include as many stories from Nottingham and New York in it, so that people who buy the magazine in those stores feel like they're getting something interesting as well. And that's maybe including people like local labels or whatever in those areas, or interviewing staff. But obviously, because I just have to kind of go out and talk to as many people as possible and get as many things in. But that hopefully it will become... There are a lot of articles by staff in there, but because I work in Rough Trade East primarily, they're mainly from Rough Trade East staff. But ideally, for me, in a few issues' time, it'll be full of articles from people all over Rough Trade stores and from all over the world, and artists and things. But I think that's the goal for me, is just to get as many staff writing for it as possible. Everyone's got such fantastic taste, and everyone's got really different tastes as well. So I'm also kind of going around the stores trying to work out who's into what, sort of, you know, casually asking them, so what kind of stuff do you collect? To try and get a handle on, right, he's the electronic guy, he's the you know, prog guy. In fact, there isn't a prog guy.
You've now got a column.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't complain about it.
So every new music magazine needs a prog column.
There's a really great guy, there's a really funny guy in who works in mail order in Rough Trade East called Joff, and there was an email going around the other week about, he made this list just casually on his own of all the things in life that he's really terrified of, and that's now a column. I mean, it's just, it's like grating off the end of his fingers when he's grating cheese. That's one of his fears, so that's going to be a column that running about the things that Joff's are scared of.
Again, universal appeal. Things that Joff is scared of.
Yeah.
On that note, we're going to take a short break. We're trying to answer the question today, why would you launch a music magazine in 2016, with Liv Siddle and Mark Ellen. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we'll continue our chat and we'll hear from editor Carl Henkel over in New York City, whose brand new Record Culture magazine is about to hit shelves.
Meet the Writers is the show in which we have a chance to get intimate with some exciting authors. Airing at 1500 every Saturday and available as a podcast thereafter, it's an in-depth discussion about the life and work of a different writer every week, with me, Georgina Godwin, on Monocle 24.
You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and today we're asking who would launch a music magazine in 2016. I'm in the studio with Liv Siddle, editor of the brand new Rough Trade magazine and storied editor of Times of Musical Law, Mark Ellen. New York-based Record Culture magazine is a new biannual publication due to launch online on February 15th and in stores from the beginning of May. Mixing lifestyle with long format pieces and plenty of photography thrown in for good measure, the focus is firmly on independent musicians aimed at in-the-know consumers. The magazine is a passion project by copywriter by day and editor by night, Carl Henkel. Monocle's New York bureau chief, Ed Stocker, caught up with him in the Big Apple to find out why he decided that now was the right time to launch a new music magazine.
It was kind of a personal decision. I've been a freelance journalist for quite some time now, and I guess on a personal level, I prefer reading things in print myself. I spend my days working as an online journalist, sort of spending far too long on the internet anyway. So when it comes to reading content, I find that my attention span just is really small. So doing things in print just provided the opportunity to do things properly as well, sort of to go out and spend quite a lot of time with each of the subjects and to commission photographers to go out to their studios or homes and really do things sort of as it should be done. I mean, as I want it to be done, which unfortunately with the constraints of online sort of can't always happen these days.
Well, I've got a copy of this beautiful launch issue in front of me. I'm just going to thumb through it now. And well, obviously very photo-led, I'd say. Some extremely beautiful shots in here, a lot of full page photos. Also nice to see actually not a lot of advertising at all. Is that something you'd actually like to increase, or you're making a kind of purposeful decision to rely on a different model for revenue?
We were lucky enough to get Master and Dynamic, a headphone company, on board for this issue. So we do have one advertiser, but there's a conscious decision to keep advertising low, to sort of keep it to about 5 or 6 per issue would be ideal. But I think just the constraints of being a new publication and not having the sort of proven audience or all the sort of hard facts that will get you advertising dollars, that's a bit hard to show for your first issue. So it's definitely possible to get advertising, but you definitely have to put a lot of time into it and convince the people on the other side that your project's worthwhile.
Which means really that, you know, you have to have quite a lot of cojones, you know, these days. You have to be bold to launch a magazine in this environment, would you say? But it still didn't deter you from doing it.
I suppose it sort of didn't come from that place, but I guess now that we've sort of got the issue printed, you sort of do realize there's printing costs, there's shipping, there's all those sort of all those things that you have to take into account. And I mean, at the end of the day, we do need to sell a certain number of copies to make our money back. So that's just the reality.
Looking at other music magazines, what do you think Record Culture magazine has to offer that is different to its competitors out there?
I guess it looks at DJs, producers, record labels, sort of radio shows, all these things that they definitely get attention in mainstream music media, but they're definitely not at the forefront. So these are sort of people who run, like someone like Tim Sweeney, who runs Beats in Space in New York. He has a really strong sort of grassroots following, I suppose. He's not a household name by any means, but what's interesting is that these people all have strong communities that are around them. So when we go to talk to them, it's as much as about talking to the person as much as sort of getting a feel for the community around them and the city that they live in. And that's often far more interesting even. It's sort of a move away from the more commonly PR agenda-driven music journalism, which I was a part of as a music journalist, and it's just not something I find particularly interesting.
And who are you trying to appeal to? What sort of reader do you want to be picking up the magazine?
So I guess I have two people in mind, sort of the people that follow these artists anyway, someone like Tim Sweeney or Kindness or Philippe Zadar or Love Fingers. They all have strong followings that will be interested in seeing inside their studios and sort of these in-depth conversations. And then I guess on the other hand, there's also people that are just interested in independent print. And I count myself as both of these people, just someone that'll pick up a publication just to sort of get to know a new creatives or get to know things that they hadn't been exposed to before.
And at the moment, twice a year, plans to be more frequent, or at the moment you want to keep it on that two times a year model?
We're going to start at two times a year just because it takes time to create the content and get it to the level that we want it to be. And yeah, it's just exciting to sort of start hearing reactions from people and sort of hearing that this is something they've been waiting for. So that's really nice from our end.
And that was Ed Stocker in New York, showing off that he knows the Spanish for balls, cajones there.
That's very well pronounced.
Very well pronounced. He was talking to Carl Henkel, editor of the brand new Record Culture magazine, and that's due to launch later on this month. Why were we talking about that? Because we're answering the question, why on earth would you launch a music magazine in 2016? I'm joined by Liv Siddle, editor of also brand new Rough Trade magazine, and Mark Ellen. Well, that was quite interesting stuff.
I was very envious of the fact that he puts out two issues a year. Yeah. That's a brilliant job.
What a dream.
Two things to be jealous of, yeah. Two issues a year, and he doesn't really care about advertising.
I think he probably has to say that. Actually,
I caramba.
To justify the fact that there may not be that much advertising in the early issues, but I'm sure it will grow, you know.
Yeah.
But when we launched Mojo magazine, I remember we put out 11 copies a year instead of 12 because there wasn't any advertising in January. So we just take January off, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we became rather successful and people wanted to advertise us, and we had to go back to work again.
Damn
but it.
It
was just it was a terrific little January holiday, you know.
Well, let's talk about that, because we are the backstory to asking this question is obviously the commercial, you know, question of how do you launch a music magazine as well. Liv, how does it work with Rough Trade? Because you haven't got advertising in there this month, but is the idea to have advertising in it, or is it the idea that it feels very in-house and commercial free?
Well, the first issue we haven't had advertising. That was kind of a treat. We decided just to have the first one just pretty fresh, and we've got the inside front and back cover is actually Charles Bradley's oil paintings, which we had photographed in his house. He's an oil painter as well as being a soul singer.
Yeah.
So that's been a real treat. But we are going to try and get advertising for issue two onwards. I'm totally fine with that. To be honest, when I read magazines, which I do a lot, I really don't look twice at adverts, and I'm quite happy to have them in Rough Trade magazine as long as they're relatively the right fit and they're not a brand that I think is evil or anything. I think it's absolutely fine. I don't think it's a problem. I'm not sure how I'd feel if we were going to go down the advertorial route, because I've written them before and I felt like a really bad person. I don't think I want to have...
So is that when someone's holding a gun to your head and says, you've got to absolutely love this new album by Marillion?
Things that are maybe subtly paid for that aren't... I don't want any of that. And maybe I will have to succumb to that later, but I'm going to try and not do that
ever. Advertorial feels like an unlikely fit for music magazines generally, doesn't it? I mean, it's one of those weird things, unless it's a band interview brought to you in association with someone that makes sneakers or something like that, which isn't so bad, but is a bit of a strange universe sometimes.
It totally depends what it is, but I think I have the highest respect for the readers, and I don't ever want for them to think that we're fooling them or kind of tricking them. I don't want any of that. I want to be honest. So that's why I quite like adverts that are in your face, because you know it's an advert.
Absolutely.
It's fine.
No wool should be pulled over the eyes of the Rough Trade magazine reader. One of the things that Carl Henkel, editor of Record Culture magazine, as we heard there in New York, he said right at the beginning of that report that he was doing a magazine as it should be done, he said. And he was talking about sort of original photography, perhaps often shot on film as well, and doing it kind of an old school way. I guess you can do that with small print run, almost sort of fanzine-y, a sort of posh fanzine-y kind of way of doing things. How do you feel is the way it should be done, Mark? I mean, in this day and age, is there a right way of doing it, or should you just get it out there?
Well, there are certain things that really still work in magazines. I think really interesting and unique photography and pictures printed on the printed page is infinitely more fascinating than seeing it on the internet. That makes a real difference, I think. Mm. I think long-form journalism, where you're having really long and in-depth conversations with people that can be quite complicated and also they're illustrated as well. The great advantage about reading it is you're the editor. You can go at the speed you want. You can stop, you can reread something, you can skip over and look at another picture, you can look at a little sidebar and a panel. I mean, I've read some of the most complicated things I've ever read in my life in the New Yorker about the kind of subprime mortgage scandal or whatever, which are 10,000 words long. Now, there's no television program and no radio program that could have ever got that information across to me because television and radio is just a linear thing. Someone else is the editor and they travel at the pace they want to travel at. So I think those are important things. And also just giving people really unique editorial, you know, editorial they can't get anywhere else. I mean, there are two types. There's the private eye end of the scale. We're going away from music magazines, but private eye sells really well because it has unique, cheap editorial, which you can't get anywhere else. And then there's the kind of mojo magazine end of the scale, which is catering to people with an absolutely insatiable appetite for detail. Yeah. For any amount of information and photographs and stuff is fascinating. And the other thing is design, is that you're making a really beautiful object. I don't think that too much emphasis can be put on that. You've got to produce something. This looks really lovely to me. I love the typefaces and I love the illustrations. It's got just a gorgeous, it feels gorgeous and it feels haveable. And that's a little kind of terribly corny thing to say, but it's a bit of a kind of brand identity. You know, it says something about you. Mm. If you're a Rough Trade reader or, you know, when I was working at the NME, you know, people were NME readers and we carried around with them wanting people to think that was the kind of person they were.
With Melody Maker
readers. Yeah, they would roll up their copy and belabor a Melody Maker reader. Exactly.
This is what Liv Siddle is encouraging, I presume,
absolutely.
With Rough Trade.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Any other,
yeah.
Violence on the streets.
Yes. Violence on the streets, exactly.
When you see someone carrying uncut, you have a
we haven't really kind of gone into how dangerous that could be as a weapon rolled up, but I think we'll leave it there. I don't think we need to get into that. I think
you can do
I think we're all peace, love, and harmony in this radio studio. It's an interesting one. I mean, congratulations on, may I say, a fine smelling. At least Mark and I seem to agree that it's
fragrant.
It's a fragrant magazine, as much as it being a beautiful one and a welcome addition to to presumably all the Rough Trade shops. It's such a great front cover as well.
Yes, this week is the week that I've kind of been dreading for the last 4 months, in that this is the week where all the Rough Trade staff, who I respect and am terrified of, are going to be looking at it and talking about it in the pub. And, you know, it's this is the week where I'm being judged beyond anything else in my life. And it's been a few sleepless nights, but I think hopefully they'll like it. And if not all of it, then some of it. You can't please everyone, but I hope it goes down well with them, because that's who I really want to like it, is the staff.
Well, they'll be looking at it and wanting to be in it, wanting to have their own columns. I'm absolutely convinced.
I hope so.
I'm really looking forward to knowing which pub near the shop in Nottingham, the two shops in London and the one in New York, have got the best writers in it.
Yeah.
Which whoever lives sits next to.
Exactly. That's your definition of an editorial meeting.
That's
I love that.
Yeah, I love that as well.
Editorial summit.
I mean, let it be said that anyone that buys me a pint has got a good chance of being in that magazine. So if anyone wants to drop me an email, I will go for a pint with them, and that's fine.
Irresistible.
But I think that magazine has to be open to anyone and everyone who wants to be part of it. And yeah, I'll just have to select who that's going to be. But I always thought it was going to be hard to put out a 64-page magazine every month. We'll pretty much make it every fortnight, but actually now I realise there's so many people I can talk to, and stories to be told, and funny features to do, and interviews to be done. I mean, we've almost got too much all the time. I might not be saying that in November, but at the moment we're doing all right.
I think my thanks.
Some other famous person's parrot on the front.
Yes, exactly.
Do you know anyone, Mark? Or?
No, we have to think of that. Restricted cover stars can only be people with parrots.
Or guinea pigs.
Any
pets.
Yeah, pets. Pets win prizes.
Yes.
And that brings us to the end of today's show, which asked who would launch a music magazine in 2016. Because paper's better than pixels. Because you might want to be part of a club, or that club might want you to be a member of it. Because why not? You just want to make a beautiful object. Thank you to both my guests, Liv Siddle and Mark Ellen. Rough Trade magazine launches today, available from Rough Trade stores located in New York, London and Nottingham. You've been listening to Culture, where my producer was Holly the fanzine Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Pound, and thank you very much for tuning in.